Welcome to episode number 16 of Tech Talk today on WCCR 94.5 LPFM, live from the beautiful campus of University of the Cumberlands in Williamsburg, Kentucky. Triple T provides you with the latest news in the tech world and our opinions of what it all means. As always, we enjoy tweets to at WCCR Tech Talk during the show with your comments and ideas. I'm Justin Hensley. And, oh, wait, Kurt Lawson isn't here, so he's not going to say anything. It's just me by myself today, so let's go ahead and get Triple T started with this week's Tech Roundup. And we wish the best to Kurt while he is on vacation this week. He's actually feeling a little under the weather, so, Kurt, if you happen to be listening today, hope you get to feeling better and hope you have a great rest of your vacation. In tech world, Network World has an article here on poaching. A former employee of Oracle has sued the company for allegedly conspiring with Google to prevent poaching of certain categories of managers from each other in a bid to keep salaries low. Oracle restricted hiring agreement with Google was part of a bigger conspiracy by technology companies located mainly in the Silicon Valley that prevented solicitation of each other's managers, according to a class action complaint from Greg Garrison, who handled sales of Oracle's Crystal Ball software from about December 2008 to June 2008. The tech companies put each other's employees off limits to each other by introducing quote-unquote do not cold call lists required companies to inform each other before hiring the other's employees. This is according to the complaint Tuesday in the U.S. District Court for the Northern District of California, San Jose Division. The elimination of competition and suppression of compensation and mobility had a, quote, negative cumulative effect, end quote, on all class members, according to the complaint. Seven companies settled similar charges in 2010 with U.S. Department of Justice while admitting no wrongdoing, but agreed not to ban cold calling and enter into any agreements that prevent competition for employees. These companies were Google, Apple, Intel, Adobe Systems, Intuit, Lucasfilm, and Pixar. So as you could tell by this article, it's a fine line to walk when you talk about whether or not you should, get employees from another business. Now, there are agreements out there that businesses sign to make sure that, maybe in the midst of a project that they don't try to poach one of your employees and bring them from working on a project at your business to working at their business. There's agreements that are signed in contracts like that, but they have to be really careful here. And we notice here that this employee is suing Oracle and for conspiring with Google to prevent managers from talking to each other and overall trying to keep salaries low so that they wouldn't take a better deal at another company. So these type of things are good to look out for in the legal technology world. And we see a lot of legal tech articles here while we're talking on Tech Talk today. Microsoft issue here, Network World article talking about our good friend Satya Nadella, the CEO of Microsoft. And as you may or may not have heard, he kind of stuck his foot in his mouth by saying that women should be seen but not heard as far as asking for raises. Now, that wasn't his quote, but that's essentially what he said. On Friday, he attempted to walk those comments back and was rather oddly credited by many media outlets for apologizing, even when he really didn't. So yesterday he did apologize in the form of an email. And here's the quote. One of the answers I gave at a conference last week was generic advice that was just plain wrong. I apologize. For context, I had received this advice from my mentors and followed it in my own career. I do believe that at Microsoft, in general, good work is rewarded, and I have seen it many times here. But my advice underestimated exclusion and bias, conscious and unconscious, that can hold people back. Any advice that advocates passivity in the face of bias is wrong. Leaders need not act and shape the culture to root out biases I'm sorry, leaders need to act and shape the culture to root out biases and create an environment where everyone can effectively advocate for themselves, end quote. Mr. Sedella went under some pretty rough criticism for his comments that he made. He was asked a question about, the position of women in technology. And as you may or may not know, there's been a lot of women in technology who have done great things. For example, the inventor of COBOL, okay? She was a great programmer in her time, and there's a lot of ladies out there who do a lot of things in the world of tech. And, it just goes to show you that any time that you speak in public, just like I'm talking on the radio right now, you have to be careful, and you have to make sure that you don't say things that you don't really mean, or maybe if you really do mean them, maybe you should just keep them to yourself. But it is interesting that he apologized. That's something that we don't really see a lot from other CEOs, and this is typically where Kurt and I would take a stance and talk back and forth a little bit, but he's not here today, so I'll just give my stance. I think it's good that he apologized and brought that forth to everyone, and essentially he sent out an email to his folks at Microsoft as well, but essentially said, hey, I was wrong, and I need to fix that. And so that's good. We're glad that he did that, and hope that he'll learn from that next time. Network World article about Facebook. They're doubling the rewards it will pay for security vulnerabilities related to code that runs its advertising system, the company stated Wednesday. A comprehensive security audit of its ads code was recently completed, but Facebook, quote, would like to encourage additional scrutiny from white hats to see what we may have missed, end quote. The word white hats refers to ethical security researchers as opposed to black hats who take advantage of the vulnerabilities. So when you hear or see that term white hat, we're talking about a person who goes into code, programming code, and looks for vulnerabilities to be able to tell the people who write the code, hey, you need to fix this. If it's a black hat, if the person is deemed a black hat, then what they're trying to do is they're trying to exploit that vulnerability for bad. So we need to be careful about those types of folks. According to the article, the bug bounty program guidelines, Facebook pays a minimum of $500 U.S. For valid bug report. Until the end of the year, that has been increased to $1,000. Mr. Colin Green, he's a security engineer, wrote in a blog post that a majority of the reports it receives concern more common parts of Facebook code, but the company would like to encourage interest in ads to better protect businesses. Facebook's ad tools include the Ads Manager, the Ads API, or Application Programming Interface, and Analytics, which also is called Insights. The company also wants to close scrutiny of its back-end billing code as well. And as you well know, the companies like Facebook and Google and these other companies who essentially have a lot of free-to-use services work off of ads, and that's where they make their money. And so if the system in the background is not properly calculating the number of clicks and the number of site visits, then that means that the company may be paying out too much to the ad purchaser, or they may not be paying out enough to them. So the importance of finding these bugs inside of the ad code where someone could maliciously create extra attempts at extra clicks or extra views of the ad in order to make Facebook pay out more to a customer who really didn't get that many ad views, that would make a huge difference to Facebook and other companies as well. I know that at the start it seems, why would they care about the ads? But the ads is where they make the money, and that's where it's all at. So big deal there. So it used to be $500, but now until the end of the year, $1,000, $1,000 US for a valid bug report. So if you're a coder and you enjoy looking for bugs in code, you can make $1,000 by telling Facebook if they've got a code problem in one of their ads. So it might be something interesting for you to look at. BGR article tells us it's official. Too much Google Glass is very bad for you. The Guardian notices that a new article published in the journal Addictive Behaviors details treatment for one man's severe addiction to Google Glass, which led him to experience painful withdrawal symptoms that were linked to withdrawal from alcoholism. The man had apparently been using Google's computerized headset for an insane 18 hours a day, and he would only remove the device while sleeping or showering. He became irritable and argumentative when he didn't have the device on, and even started having dreams in which he viewed everything through the glass's tiny little window. Dr. Andrew Doan, who co-wrote the study on the patient, said that internet and technology addiction is something that psychologists and neuroscientists are only beginning to understand. He said in a quote, "People used to believe alcoholism wasn't a problem. They blamed it on the person or the people around them," end quote. And then he also went on to say, "It's just going to take a while for us to realize that this is real." So this guy obviously wouldn't put down his piece of technology, his Google Glass, and kind of made him go crazy. Now, if you don't know much about the Google Glass, it's it looks like a pair of eyeglasses, and you can actually have it fitted to prescription frames or prescription lenses, and it essentially puts a small screen in front of your eye, and you're able to communicate with the glass through voice commands, and you can tell it to take a picture or something like that, and all this stuff shows up on the screen. So this guy obviously kind of overdid it. So we'll keep an eye out over the next few months to see if we see any more articles like this pop up and see if anybody else is becoming addicted to Google Glass. And personally, I hope that if they get really addicted to it and they want to maybe, get rid of it for a few months, maybe they'll just send it my way. I'd love to play with one. If anybody out there listening to this is one of those folks who has the higher power to call Google and say, "Hey, we'd like one of those to give to the guys at Tech Talk today," then that would be wonderful. We would love you. Anyway, if you've had a chance to play with Google Glass and you've enjoyed it, liked it, maybe you're on the road right now listening to me between Jellicoe and Corbin here in the Kentucky region, or maybe you're listening to us online or on our podcast, shoot us a tweet at WCCR Tech Talk. Tell us what you thought about your Google Glass experience. We'd love to read that. Or post a message on Facebook or send an email to us, WCCRTechTalk@gmail.com. PC Magazine article, the guy who they thought was the founder of Bitcoin is getting pretty upset. Essentially, he started a website called Newsweek Lied. That's the title of his website, attempting to crowdfund money to sue Newsweek for inaccurately identifying Dorian Nakamoto as the mysterious founder of Bitcoin. Nakamoto, a 65-year-old unemployed engineer, said his life has been chaos since the publication of the Newsweek article. His family doesn't understand, and he's in severe financial distress, making it difficult to care for his ailing 93-year-old mother. As a result, the site urges supporters to donate money for Dorian's legal defense fund. The Bitcoin community has already donated approximately $23,000 worth of Bitcoin to Nakamoto to cover his personal expenses, but a lawsuit against Newsweek will be very expensive, the site says. A quote here says that Dorian does not have the resources to pay the cost of such a suit, let alone attorney's fees. Monies raised by the fund will be used to further Dorian's legal claims against Newsweek. Anything remaining will be given directly to Dorian for his expenses, end quote. That's off the website. Virtual currency Bitcoin is thought to have been created by someone named Satoshi Nakamoto, but that person's true identity has never been revealed. The name first appeared in 2008 white paper introducing the cryptocurrency, but many believed it was just an alias for some Tokyo-based computer genius or even a group of hackers set on challenging traditional currencies. Earlier this year, Newsweek published an article titled "The Face Behind Bitcoin," which said Dorian Nakamoto founded Bitcoin. Now, Nakamoto has denied any connection to Bitcoin since the story was published, and in a two-hour interview with the AP, Associated Press, he claimed that there was misquoting, misunderstanding, and even made-up statements in the article. So I think we even covered this one. And this was earlier in the summer. We covered about this Newsweek article that came out talking about Dorian Nakamoto and about the Bitcoin industry. And we've talked about Bitcoin a few times here on Tech Talk today. And essentially, Bitcoin, in case you don't know, it's a virtual currency. It's not a backed currency. It's not even backed by governments for the most part. But we are starting to see it used. There are several vendors. I think the last thing we said about Bitcoin on Tech Talk today was how Dell was using it on their website to be able to purchase computers. So Bitcoin is coming about, but it's going to be a while before it's actually a valid currency. And it still has that air of weird, I guess, is what you would call it. That air of, oh, there's something wrong with this. And so that's kind of, I think, where this is starting to build up from. This guy was supposedly the founder of this, and then everybody started asking him questions and wanting to do interviews with him, and he says he's not. So I don't know. Maybe he is, maybe he isn't. But regardless, he's going to try to get back at Newsweek for their article. A Recode article about Google's earnings. Now, Google, I did not get a chance to take a look at the reports before the show, but Google did report its third quarter financial results at the close of market today. And since the company doesn't break out its sales figures for mobile versus desktop, the important metrics to look at are its cost per click rates, which advertisers pay when a user clicks on search ads, and its paid click growth, which is money Google gets when people click on ads that appear on its sites and on its partner sites. So mobile ad rates are generally much lower than they are for the desktop, and much more people use their smartphones and tablets to access the web. Online publishers and ad companies like Google will see slower growth revenue. So essentially what we're saying here is the mobile ad rates are lower than the desktop ad rates still, okay? And so as more and more people begin to use their smartphones and their tablets to access the web, the online publishers and the ad companies like Google are going to start to see slower revenue growth because we're kind of evening out those two divisions. Now, Mark Mahaney of RBC Capital Markets, who offers his usual helpful Google earnings cheat sheet, which is on this site. It's a Recode.net article from today. He expects Google's paid click growth to be noticeably down. And then also Doug Anmuth of J.P. Morgan said Google's cost per click should decrease less than it has been in recent quarters because people are starting to pay more for mobile advertising, which only makes sense. I mean, the more people you have use mobile devices, the more that you're going to pay to have your ad on a mobile device. Meanwhile, a new report from the search agency in Google said Google had an 88% year-over-year click-through rate increase on smartphones in the third quarter. So that's pretty huge, 88% year-over-year on click-through rate. So people are clicking through their ads to get to another site. That's pretty big. The company also measured big gains from Google's shopping feature, product listing ads, saying that they doubled in impressions over the last year. So when you go to Google.com, either on your desktop or on your phone, and you see that shopping icon, you can click on it and go to a site and purchase something. That's what they're talking about there. Now, there's another angle to consider. Ben Schneider of Macquarie says that beyond this quarter, Facebook strength and Apple Pay will have positive effects on Google as they lift the overall market. So more people using paid features to pay for things on their mobile devices, that's just going to lift Google's ads for that. And don't forget that we'll talk more about this, but Google this week previewed its new phones, tablets, and set-top boxes, and it also announced it'll finally start charging for that shopping delivery service that we've talked about in the past as well. So just some Google news there for today. PC Mag article, Facebook has come out with an interesting product called Safety Check. Most people use Facebook to share cat videos and BuzzFeed quizzes, but social media can be a great resource when in need. Facebook this week launched Safety Check, which lets users share their status and check on others during an emergency. Quote from their company blog says, "In times of disaster or crisis, people turn to Facebook to check on loved ones and get updates. It is in these moments that communication is the most critical, both for people in the affected areas and for their friends and families anxious for news, end quote. Available globally, Android, iOS, and feature phones, desktops, a simple and easy feature is activated after a natural disaster. So, for example, let's say there's an earthquake in a Facebook hometown of Menlo Park. If you have safety check activated and you're in the affected area, Facebook will send you a notification that asks, "Are you safe?" You can then select "I'm safe" or "I'm not in the area," which will be posted for your friends to see. If you're out of town but have friends living in an affected area, you will also receive a notification when they have marked themselves as safe. Only your Facebook friends, supposedly, we'll see your safety status in the comments you share. And we know that pretty much anybody can see anything. But interesting little feature there from Facebook. I'm really missing Kurt right now, because about this time I would say, "Hey, Kurt, do you think this is something you would use?" And then Kurt would talk about it for a little while, but he's not here, so I guess I will. I can see this being helpful. Especially if you had family members that lived all across the states and you want to make sure they were okay. I'm still kind of leery, you know, about putting this type of information out in social networking. You have to be really careful about what you put out there. And I know that I'm kind of a, strange person when it comes to this, but, you know, say for instance that you put up and say, okay, you know, there's somebody, you use this safety check, and there's a event in your area, and then you post and say, "Oh, I'm not even there." Well, then now everybody on Facebook is supposedly just your friends, but anybody who can get in and see anything can know that you're not at home. And isn't that a great time to, you know, go mess with something at your house if they want to? Yeah, it's just those kind of things that I think about. And so, you know, in my opinion, the less we could put on social media, the better. But, you know, it is what it is. And it's cool that they're thinking about this kind of thing. If people are going to use it anyway, then why not come up with something like this to actually help people and make them safe? So kudos to Facebook. Good stuff for folks. Another PC Mag article, one day after HBO announced plans to offer a standalone streaming service in 2015, CBS said it too will embrace the web. The network on Thursday launched a new digital subscription service dubbed CBS All Access, which offers thousands of episodes of current and classic shows on demand for $5.99 a month. Okay, so this is very important. If you're a cord cutter, which means that you don't have cable TV or Dish or anything like that at home, or if you're thinking about becoming a cord cutter, listen to this. Okay, $5.99 a month for CBS All Access, meaning you'll no longer need a cable package to watch shows like The Big Bang Theory and NCIS. That includes full seasons of 15 current primetime shows with episodes available the day after they air, and the ability to live stream local CBS stations in 14 of the largest markets at launch. CBS said it would be adding more live streaming content as additional affiliates join the service. Subscribers will also be able to catch up on full past seasons of 8 current shows, including The Good Wife, Blue Bloods, and Survivor, and watch special events like the Grammy Awards, Academy of Country Music Awards, and the Victoria's Secret Fashion Show when they air. There are more than 5,000. Too bad Kurt's not here. He loves that fashion show. Hope he's listening to this right now. He'll send me a text. There are more than 5,000 episodes of CBS classics like Star Trek, Cheers, MacGyver, Twin Peaks, and CSI Miami. And you won't have to sit through any ads for any of them because you're paying $5.99 for the service. The service is available today at CBS.com and on mobile devices through company's app for iOS and Android. Sorry, Kurt, it doesn't say anything about Windows Phone. And CBS is offering a one-week free trial so that you can see how you like it. It'll be available on all major digital platforms in the coming months, and CBS said the service is a win-win for viewers and the company. It allows the fans to watch programming online and on mobile devices when they're out and about, while introducing a new monetization window for the company's content. Now, you know, this is a good thing for CBS, I think. It's going to be a good thing for HBO to get this content online where people will be able to have it out there. And you remember we talked a lot about Aereo. Okay. Kind of think back to maybe somewhere around episode 8, 9, or 10 of Tech Talk today, and we talked about Aereo. And Aereo was that company that was trying to they had it set up and they were in court to, you know, put these antennas up on top of buildings, and you could essentially rent an antenna and get all that content put on a DVR box, and you could watch it whenever you wanted to. And CBS was one of the folks that said, oh, we hate this because it's going to mess up all of our content. You know, people aren't going to pay as much and they're going to drop cable, yada, yada, yada. And notice this kind of comes on the tail of that. So now instead of Aereo getting money from people to be able to watch CBS, CBS is going to monetize on this. And they're going to say, oh, well, if you'll pay us $6 a month, we will provide you with all these shows that you can go back and watch. And you even get them the day after they come out, because with Aereo, you're going to get them immediately as soon as they played. You get them the day after they come out. And so this is almost as good as having, you know, having a dish or cable. Not quite what cord cutters were looking for. It's better than nothing. Okay. That's why I said at the front, if you're a cord cutter or thinking about being one, you need to listen to this. But you know, it's gotta go somewhere. Okay. We're somehow or another going to have to get out of this mediocre stuff of sitting on the fence and saying, okay, we'll give you a little bit of it, but not a lot. Either they're going to have to switch over to an a la carte service, or we're going to be still stuck in this thing of, you know, you get to see your content through paying a whole lot of money to a cable or satellite system. And hopefully, I hope it goes a la carte. I think that would be great. But, you know, I'm not in charge of that. That's just my opinion. A Wall Street Journal article about Google Fiber. Google's ultra-fast internet service, Google Fiber, is launching in Austin, Texas, a few months behind the company's original schedule. The sign-up process starts in December, focusing on south and southeastern parts of Austin, a Google spokeswoman said on Wednesday. Now, in April 2013, when Google first announced it was coming to Austin, the company said in a blog that it planned to start connecting homes in the city by mid-2014. But building fiber optic networks from scratch is complex and messy. That's very true. In late September, Google said its construction crews had begun laying more than 3,000 miles of cables underground and on thousands of utility poles in Austin. That requires powerful drills to tunnel through Austin's limestone and sonar detection to avoid hitting extensive infrastructure and utilities in the ground. Austin will be the third location for Google Fiber. The service, which offers internet speeds of 1 gigabit per second, about 100 times the U.S. average, came to Kansas City, Missouri first, and then Provo, Utah. Now, Google spokeswoman declined to say how much Google Fiber will cost in Austin. However, the company has said in the past that prices will be similar to Kansas City, where the people can choose from an internet and TV package for $120 a month, an internet-only service for $70 a month, and slower internet service that's free for 7 years after a $300 installation fee. So, you know, some interesting offerings here from Google, and, you know, I doubt they'll be coming to our area anytime soon. You know, maybe somewhere like a Lexington or a Knoxville, but not to Williamsburg, I wouldn't think, just because the venue's too small. But in these larger cities, they're going to try to start running this stuff and see how they can do, and it's never bad to put infrastructure underground. I mean, if Google was to go under tomorrow, they could sell off that fiber and somebody else could use it. So it's never bad to put the infrastructure underground. And I think that will work out well for them in the end. So that is all for our tech roundup. And now it's time for App of the Week. App of the Week this week is TuneIn Radio. TuneIn Radio, T-U-N-E-I-N Radio, and that's at TuneIn.com. And I actually found this the other day while I was I don't know if I got an email. Oh no! I saw it. I'm a big Tennessee Vols fan, by the way. Go Vols! And I was looking through my Facebook feed, and I saw where somebody had posted, "Hey, I can listen to the Vol Network on this app." And so I went out and took a look at it, and it's actually pretty cool. So you can download this app on iOS, Android, and you can also go online at tunein.com and access the services there. And they have over 100,000 real radio stations and more than 4 million podcasts streaming from every continent. You can explore and follow the best in sports, news, music, talk, and you can also create a personalized feed there as well. And one of the things I noticed is that they also have like local CB radio stations. So like, for instance, the Laurel County Fire, Police, and EMS out of Laurel County, just up north of us there. They have that station on there that you can listen to. They obviously have lots of our local radio stations, the ones that transmit over the internet, and then obviously you can get national stations as well. So, for instance, if you're a Vols fan like me, you can listen to the Vols Network pretty much any time of the day and get all your latest Vols news. If you're a UK fan, you could probably find some sort of station on there that'll do that as well, although I didn't look for that. But that app is called TuneIn Radio, okay? It's TuneIn, TuneIn.com, okay? And you can go out on their website and check that out. And once again, TuneIn doesn't pay us anything for this. They don't even know that we're talking about them today. So we're just we like to give you some apps that we like. And I found this one today, obviously, since I'm the one here. And we find some apps that we like and provide that information to you. So TuneIn.com, you can check out our app of the week. And that is all for that. And let's move into our deep dive. All right, starting off for our deep dive today, obviously, if you've seen any news at all, you've noticed that there has been a whole lot of Apple announcements today. Apple made announcements today. Google made announcements yesterday. So let's start our deep dive off with some Apple announcements. As you may or may not have noticed, Apple came out with several products today. They came out with the new iMac. They came out with the new iPad Air and iPad Mini. And they also came out with the newest version of Yosemite OS X. They came out with the newest version of their operating system. For the Mac, MacBook, Mac Pro, for that operating system. And then they also announced iOS 8.1. So just want to take a look at a couple of highlights, I guess, from today's stuff. Tim Cook said that Apple Pay is going to launch on Monday, October 20th, along with iOS 8.1. So iOS 8.1 is launching on Monday. And then the OS X software for your Mac, your MacBook Pro, that came out today, actually, and you can download that today. And he said that that Apple Pay, which the company introduced during the iPhone announcement event in September, he said, "We think it is going to be profound." He said that additional 500 banks have signed on to support Apple Pay since they brought it out. And kind of an interesting little number I saw here. Tim said today that 48% of iOS device owners are already running iOS 8. That's pretty impressive. I mean, it's been out for a few weeks, and that means that, you know, almost half of all iOS device owners. So we're talking, iPhones and iPads. Almost 50% of those are already running iOS 8. He also said that Apple devices will communicate better with each other with these updates. He said that the company has made improvements in how gadgets work together through Wi-Fi and Bluetooth, helping enable new features such as the ability to AirDrop between Macs and iPhones or iPads, and using AirPlay for Apple TV without a required Wi-Fi connection. So essentially, you can set up an ad hoc connection between your device and the Apple TV, and you can AirPlay, which is pretty cool. In the past, you had to have some sort of wireless network set up. And not only that, but Apple products are pretty specific, especially if you get them in a corporate environment. There have been problems in the past with Apple AirPlay working in a corporate environment because there's multiple subnets and multiple networks. And when you introduce that to an Apple network, it messes things up. And you have to have special devices on the network in order to transmit that traffic. And so now, in order for an AirPlay to work between an iPad or an iPhone or an Apple TV, then all you'll need to do is just set up a connection between the two, and it'll just work. So that's actually a really neat feature. I'm excited to see that come. Now, Yosemite is going to be available on the Mac Store. Yosemite is the newest version of OS X. It's going to be available on the Mac App Store for free starting today. Meanwhile, iOS 8 again will launch on Monday. So on Monday, you'll be able to go and download iOS 8.1 for your device. Once again, I always suggest this. I would wait for 24, 48 hours just to make sure that there's not any huge bugs, because if there are, you're going to run into some problems. They brought out 8.01 and 8.02 pretty quickly after they brought out 8.0. And if you remember, I think in our previous episode, we've been gone for a couple of weeks. In our previous episode, and again, while we're talking about that, let me apologize about that. We were Kurt and I, our schedules, we just couldn't get our schedules together over the last couple of weeks. And we love doing Tech Talk Today, and we just couldn't get the schedules to work out. I was on the road, and he had some things going on, and we just couldn't get it to work out. So we missed being on the air. And even though Kurt's on vacation this week, I said, Kurt, I'm going to go in the studio, and I'm going to have a show anyway, just so we can get some tech news out to folks. So I hope you're enjoying the show today. On our last episode, we mentioned that 8.0.1 had actually messed up some phones to where they couldn't even connect to their cellular provider. So you may want to kind of hold off on 8.1 until they come out with maybe an 8.1.1, or, wait for 24, 48 hours. That's about how long it takes for them to figure something out. So that will work there. So just be cautious about that. Another interesting number. Tim Cook said the iPad now boasts 675,000 applications. That's impressive. Kurt and I have talked in the past at extensive length about how important the App Store is to these devices. You take an Android phone or an Android device, a Microsoft device, an Apple device. If you put them on the table without any applications, then you know what you have? You have a bunch of paperweights. You have a bunch of really expensive paperweights. If they don't have any applications on them, then they're pretty useless. The number of useful applications that you have for a device is really what makes your device. And that's what really makes the iPhone or the Apple products popular, is because they have so many apps for so many different things. And if somebody's going to write an app for something, they typically do it in iOS first. And then they'll do it in Android, and then they'll do it in Windows, and move from there. It's important. The App Store is extremely important. And 675,000 apps, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. Now, the new iPad is 18% thinner than the first iPad Air. So the first generation of iPad Air, the new iPad Air is called the iPad Air 2. Okay, so the iPad Air... this new one is 18% thinner than that one. Tim Cook came out on stage today, and he said, he essentially said, I'm not quoting here, but he essentially said, hey, he had an iPad Air 2 with him, and he said, hey, can you even see this? he was complimenting on how thin it was. So they've made it a lot thinner. We'll see how it holds up as far as hardware is concerned. They're trying to appeal to a group of folks who, want a smaller, thinner device that's not as heavy, something that's easily, stuck for maybe ladies can easily stick it in a purse. Men, like for instance with the iPad Mini, if you have a pair of khakis on with a pocket, you can easily stick your iPad Mini in your pocket. So that's pretty nice. The new iPad also includes anti-reflective coating. It's the only type of tablet with this type of surface, and it now includes an A8X chip. Okay, so if you know anything about Apple devices, they have an A number chip. Okay. We went from, you know, A3, A4, A5, and now we're up to A8, and this is A8X. Okay. That's the chip that they put in the iPad Air 2, and it's it has graphics that are 2.5 times faster than the previous chip. Now, Apple Pay will be available on the iPad Air 2, but only for online purchases made on the tablet. So the iPad Air 2 is not going to have the near-field sensor on it, where you essentially take your phone and you tap it up to a payment. Where's Kurt when I need him? A payment spot there at your local store. You won't be able to do that with the iPad Air, but you will be able to use Apple Pay to pay for things inside on the iPad for online purchases. Now, the LTE and Wi-Fi will be faster on the Air 2 as compared to the original, and the new iPad Air 2 is also going to have Touch ID. Okay, so that thing on starting with the iPhone 5S, yeah, starting with the iPhone 5S where they had the Touch ID, that's going to be included in the iPad Air 2. So it is kind of awkward if you have maybe an iPhone 5S or maybe an iPhone 6 or 6 Plus, and you can just, you know, touch your finger to the Touch ID and open it up, and then you have your iPad. I've caught myself many times touch the button on my iPad, and I'm like, oh, wait, I have to enter my code. So that'd be kind of nice to have that feature around, and it'll make it kind of more continuity across the board. If you haven't noticed, that's what Apple's trying to do here. They're trying to do continuity across the board. They're trying to make sure that all their devices will kind of do the same thing, and I applaud them for that. The iPad 2 will include 10 hours of battery life, and it adds the M8 coprocessor as well, which is just a processor that helps it with all the other functions going on inside the device. The camera also gets an upgrade. What device have you seen come from anybody who doesn't get a camera upgrade? It's an 8-megapixel EyeSight camera and image signal processing through the new A8X chip. More battery life, better camera, a better coprocessor, and that's just what you expect from these new announcements, that they have better and upgraded things. The iPad Air 2 will be available in gold, silver, and space gray. 16 gig will sell for $499, 64 gig for $599, and 128 gig for $699. And just in case you haven't noticed this, it used to be 16 gig and 32 gig and 64 gig. When I say gig, I'm talking about gigabytes, the amount of data that you can store on the device. But they completely took out 32 altogether. With the iPhone 6 and iPhone 6 Plus, and now with the iPad Air 2, they've taken out the 32 altogether. Well, why did they do that? Well, they did that because, you know, you have a hard time storing things, the less storage. What I don't really understand is why they didn't take 16 out and just sell the 32 at 16 price. That, to me, would have made more sense, but that's not what they decided to do. And if you want an LTE version of the iPad to be able to connect your iPad to your cellular network, then that's $130 more. Okay. The iPad Mini 3 was also revealed, starting at $399. It's also available in gold, silver, and space gray. And the iPad Air 2 and the iPad Mini 3 will be available for pre-order on October 17th. And as you know, that is tomorrow. And Apple is also trimming the price of the earlier iPad Mini and iPad Air models by $100. So whatever the price of those before, you trim $100 off of that, and you can get one of those for that price. And that's typical Apple. That's typically the way that they go with the new products. Now, on to iMacs. The new iMacs will have a 3.5 gigahertz quad-core i5 chip, upgradable to 4 gigahertz quad-core i7 chip, and they start off at $2,499, $2,500. And this was kind of a big announcement today, and I'll kind of get on the soapbox here for a second. I really don't understand this, but the iMac will boast a 5K display with 14.7 million pixels, 67% more pixels than a 4K HD display. We've talked on Tech Talk today about 4K TVs. There's not a whole lot of content out there right now for 4K TVs, and okay, let's back up a second. So, you know, used to, you know, when I was a kid, you had the TV that, you know, it was, you, if you looked at it today, you'd be like, wow, that's fuzzy. You know, it was just a regular tube TV. And, you know, as better screens came out, we came out with flat screens, we eventually ended up in the, you know, 720p, that was 720 pixels, and then 1080p. Okay. Now, to be honest with you, I'm not an expert in this, but from the research I've done, unless you get a big enough TV, you really can't tell the difference between 720 and 1080p. You have to have a pretty big TV, and if you get a pretty big TV, you're going to have to sit pretty far back from it, so you don't, you know, so you kind of, your field of vision is able to pick up the whole TV. So, if I'm not mistaken, from the research I've done, somewhere around 42 to 46 inches on a TV, that's about where your eyes are able to tell the difference between 720 and 1080p, as far as the quality and the number of pixels on the screen. Now, what they're saying here is that this has 67% more pixels than 4K. It's like, I don't know how many percent more pixels than 1080p. But it's on this little small screen compared to what size your TV would be, okay? You're talking a 15 or a 17-inch screen. Your eyes can't tell the difference in that. I mean, unless I just don't understand how this works very well. But you really can't tell the difference. And, I mean, I'm glad that they put all this work into making a 5K display, and that's great and wonderful. But, I mean, that to me, that's not really a selling point. If you said, okay, here is an iMac, and it has a 1080p screen, or even a 4K screen, but it has a high definition 1080p display, and I'll give this to you for $1,000. And here's one with a 5K display, and I'll give this to you for $2,500. I'll say, hey, give me the one for $1,000. Have a nice day. I don't really understand it. And you know, they were making a big deal about how you could, you know, edit a 4K movie in one section of the screen and it still be in true 4K, but your eyes can't tell the difference, I don't think, especially at that distance and at you know, at that size. So I don't know. Obviously, you know, and Kurt, if he was here, he might be able to back me off my soapbox, but since he's not, I'm on it today, and that's just my thoughts on it. So the iPad Air 2, obviously, we've talked about that, the iMac, and then the iPad mini, and then iOS 8.1 coming out on Monday. Yosemite, OS X Yosemite is out today. So if you have a Mac and you're excited about the new version of the operating system, go out and check it out. You can download that from the App Store. And then iOS 8.1 will be out, like we said, on Monday. And some pretty exciting stuff from Apple today. You can check out the whole keynote that Tim and his friends from Apple gave today. That's on apple.com if you want to go watch that. And like I said, it was on live earlier today. We're going to finish up our deep dive today with some Google announcements. The internet giant Google on Wednesday introduced the Nexus 9, which is a tablet with an 8.9-inch display manufactured by the Taiwanese manufacturer HTC, and the Nexus 6, which is a smartphone with a 6-inch display made by Motorola Mobility, and also the Nexus Player, a streaming media player by Asus and the first device running Android TV. The Nexus Player was kind of an extra gotcha. It was like kind of a surprise, and I'm sure some people knew it was coming, but for the majority of public, it was kind of like, oh, wow, okay, that's interesting. Does anybody notice a correlation here? iPad, iPhone, Apple TV, Nexus 9, Nexus 6, and Nexus Player, just in case you didn't notice that correlation. As in the past, with Nexus launches, the devices serve as a showcase for the latest version of Google's Android mobile operating system. This time it's called Lollipop, but previously it was referred to just as L. And you know that Google always comes out with these really interesting names for their Android software, and they have to come up with a lot of them because they change the flavor of it all the time. The Nexus 9 and the Nexus Player will be available for pre-order on October 17th, and that, again, is tomorrow, and will hit stores on November 3rd. Now, prices. The 16-gig version of the Nexus 9, this is the tablet, will cost $399. 32 gig version, $479, and the 32 gig version with LTE, which gives you the ability to connect it to a cellular tower, is $599. The Nexus Player and remote control will cost $99 with an optional controller for $40. Now the Nexus 6, which is the smartphone, will be available for pre-order on October 29th. And available in November. They really give a good date on that. And it's sold unlocked or through carriers. Sprint, U.S. Cellular, AT&T, and T-Mobile will sell the Nexus 6 in the U.S. The 32-gig version of the Nexus 6 will cost $649 unlocked, while the 64-gig version will cost $699 unlocked. And that's kind of a no-brainer. $649 unlocked for 32 gigs, $699 unlocked for 64 gigs. I mean, $50 more you get double your storage, so that's kind of a no-brainer if you're thinking about going and buying one of those. And once again, you know, we talked about Apple, and I know I talked about them for a lot longer. And we're talking about Google here, and you know, these devices, they do different things. And really, it's just a thing of which one you like the best. I know that some people get upset, you know, and they say, well, that guy over there is an Android user, and that guy over there, well, he's crazy. He's an iOS user. And no, I mean, you know, it's really one of those things of what are you more comfortable with? And to be honest with you, it's almost one of those things of which one did you start out using? You know, if I've used an Android device for most of my adult life, then I'm going to be more, I'm going to be on the Android bandwagon because I know it better. It just makes sense to me because I've used it. And, you know, we got to remember this new generation that's coming up who are always around, you know, these devices. I've got two little boys at home right now that are listening to this show actually as it goes, and hi to them. And they know iOS devices. You know, my 4-year-old can work my iPad just as good as I can. Why? Because that's what he's been used to. If I had an Android device, then I'm sure that he would probably be able to work that just as well, and he wouldn't really know how to work the iPad. So, you know, and for people who have used both, on the other hand, they can tell you the differences between the two. Now, I'm not one of those people. I've pretty much used iOS. I've used a little bit of, I used the old version of Winmo, Windows Mobile Phone. I have used, you know, the Surface and stuff like that, but that's essentially like using Windows 7. So, you know, if you're a user out there listening to this and you've used both Android and iOS, you know, if you want to drop us a line again at WCCR Tech Talk, you can tweet to us or send us a message. You know, just kind of let us know what your thoughts are between the two devices. You know, maybe you've used both of them and you say, okay, I really like the Android version better than the Apple version. Or, you know, maybe I really like iOS better than Android, and you know, kind of give a reason why, and that would be interesting to know. We always like to see that kind of information come through. But, you know, again, it's a thing of preference. You know, these devices are very high-powered devices. They have some of, you know, there's obvious advantages to the larger app store that Apple has versus the app store that Android has, although they're, you know, there's a whole lot out there that'll do both. A whole lot of applications out there that'll run on both. You can get them from either app store. You know, and there's more, obviously, the only type of phone that you can get with, you know, with Android on it, or I'm sorry, with iOS on it is the iPhone. There's different types of phones that run Android. And, you know, there's some price difference there. But again, it's a thing of preference. And, you know, if you're not sure which one you like best, don't just jump on the bandwagon. Go, you know, go get another one. I mean, this is probably what I should do, but go get it, you know, a different type of phone and check it out and see what you think about it, and use the one that is best suited for you. All these devices that we have, tablets, phones, laptops, desktops, all these devices are like the tools that I have in my toolbox at home. When I go to fix something, and if I have a Phillips head screw sitting there that I need to screw in, I don't pull out my hammer, okay? I don't even pull out my flathead screwdriver. I pull out my Phillips screwdriver to use on that. So, you know, that's kind of the difference. I mean, if you're a student out there and you're thinking, oh, you know, hey, guys at Tech Talk today, what should I do? You know, should I buy a laptop or a tablet? Should I get a Nexus 9? Should I get an iPad? You know, okay, think about it for a second. You're a student and you're in high school or college. What are you going to be doing a lot of? You're probably going to be doing a lot of research, a lot of online homework, and a lot of typing papers. You probably need something with a good keyboard and a pretty good screen size. Then you're probably going to need a laptop, okay? Something that's mobile, but something that has a pretty decent screen size and something that gives you the ability to type on it. So, you know, just kind of think through those things, and it'll kind of help you with your next purchase. So, you know, interesting news today from Apple, interesting news yesterday from Google, and I'm glad that they're still continuing to work on these products, and we're definitely excited here at Tech Talk today to see what they're going to come up with in the future. So that does it today for Tech Talk today. We appreciate you listening. I definitely appreciate you listening and putting up with me today without Kurt here. Please send Kurt your best wishes as he returns from vacation, and also that he would start to feel better. Again, thanks for listening to today's show. You can find us on Facebook, www.facebook.com/WCCR Tech Talk. That's WCCR Tech Talk. And also on Twitter. WCCR Tech Talk, and you can find the podcast of today's shows by searching Tech Talk Today on iTunes, or by just taking a look at our Facebook page. It'll be posted out there later. So that does it for today here on WCCR 94.5 LPFM, live from the beautiful campus of University of the Cumberlands in Williamsburg, Kentucky. And once again, we appreciate you listening, and I hope you have a great night.